Hello, hockey humans of the world, and welcome to Tough Call Pod Season 2, where I talk about all things player safety in the NHL. Questionable hits, controversial calls, join the over 2,500 others who follow me on Twitter, at Tough Call Blog, like and follow the Tough Call Facebook page, and find me on Instagram as well, Tough Call Podcast, for videos of all the latest incidents and to hear my takes on them. Send me your own clips of any hit or call you'd like me to talk about, and take a second right now and hit the subscribe button on this podcast. And while you're there, you could also leave me a review, preferably 5 stars. It'll really help me reach even more people and get the message out on how we can reduce the instances of head contact and concussions in hockey. Did you subscribe? Perfect. And thank you. Now on with the show. I have a few videos out now on my YouTube channel recommending suspensions for various incidents, and since I've gained a chunk of new subscribers and followers lately, I want to explain them a bit because my punishments tend to be a little bit on the harsh side relative to what you might expect, and I'm excited to say a lot of you are getting it. There's been a few comments wondering what I'm thinking, of course, but before I even have to respond, I got people jumping in on my behalf and really explaining what I'm saying and in a respectful, intelligent way. It's humbling, to be honest, and the overwhelming majority of the comments are just yes. Why hasn't anyone been saying this all along? And even the people who disagree, for the most part, are going, I see what you're trying to do, but... And that's good enough for me, because at least you see where I'm coming from. You at least see where I'm trying to go with this. But for the benefit of those just joining in, so what I do, I don't try and predict what the current Department of Player Safety will do. I look at things based on what I'd do if I were the head of the Department of Player Safety. So these are suspensions that I would give based on my own system. And what I base the length of my suspensions on is how much I want to get each type of incident out of the game and the degree of avoidability for each type of act. Something might not be as dangerous as something else, but I'd possibly give it a longer suspension if it's an act that doesn't come about through the natural course of play. In other words, how much does this incident relate to the game of hockey? That's what I'm looking at when I study these things. Is it a byproduct of the natural course of play, or is it a player who's just looking for trouble? And those are the actions we need to clamp down on, the types of players we need to keep in check, so that the skill of the game takes center stage. So I'm going to quickly run through my suspension scale and then give examples of how I'd apply it depending on the type of infraction. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about what currently happens and why my system is different and even most of the philosophies behind my system. For today, I'm just going to focus on explaining what my system is. As many of you know, I'm going to use cross-checking as an example. And as many of you know, that's one of my favorites. And I'm going to be putting a video out sometime this summer about what my cross-checking standards would be. But in a nutshell, most of the cross-checking we see today has nothing to do with serving a hockey purpose. I know players use it that way, but there's really no good reason for it other than simply because they can, because they get away with it. To me, there's no hockey purpose to ever cross-check anyone above the pants, and there's nothing legal about doing it to any other part of the body. The risks are too great, especially near the boards, and we've seen some brutal plays over the last few years from behind into the boards, and especially cross-checks to the face is popular. How did it get to be that way? You know, people will say I was trying to hit him in the shoulder and my stick rode up and off the pad and into his face. Well, why are you trying to cross-check anyone in the shoulder at all? So how would I put those into my suspension scale or even my punishment scale with minor penalties and things? It's all depending on force, of course, and in relation to a hockey play. So let's just assume here, for example, all things are equal. We're looking at cross-checks occurring in the course of a normal hockey battle and with light to moderate degree of force. So in that context, anything to the pants is borderline incidental to a minor penalty. Sometimes you might get away with it, sometimes you're going to get a minor penalty. Anything to the middle of the back area is almost an automatic minor penalty, and possibly a major depending on how high up the back it is and the degree of force. Anything to the upper back, the chest, the lower shoulder, now we're getting into the realm of real needlessness. Those are automatic minor penalties without question. You cross-check someone higher than the middle of the back, what are you even doing it for? And any amount of meaningful force makes that a major penalty. Once you get into the upper shoulder, the neck area, the ears, the back of the head, that's an automatic major penalty to me. It shouldn't even get that far. And anything to the face is an automatic major game misconduct and a guaranteed suspension. There's really no need of it. So depending on increasing degree of force, it'd be safe to assume things toward the pants would be more in the 1 to 5 games category if you get too hard. And as you work yourself higher up the body, you work yourself higher up the suspension scale. Anything mid-torso will probably end up as a mid-length suspension. Anything higher up the body also takes you higher up the suspension scale. So by the time you get anywhere near the head with a cross-check, it shouldn't be any surprise when you get slammed hard in your suspension hearing. It's all about how the play relates to performing your hockey purpose. And it is definitely possible to have a pretty successful hockey career without ever cross-checking anyone in the face. And that's cross checks within the course of regular play I'm talking about. What about ones after the whistle or behind the play? I hope players don't even think about delivering those cross checks. So if that's how I feel about cross checking, imagine how I feel about spearing and butt ending and slew footing. Those things serve no hockey purpose at all in any context. They're dirty, but they're also gutless. And that's why I went so hard on Leo Komarov last night for his butt end to David Pastrnak. It's bad enough at the best of times, but to go out of your way to do it after the whistle, you're basically inciting a riot. If a minor hockey kid did that, he'd be benched. He'd be kicked out of the game, and you say, oh, well, Josh, this is the NHL. It's the highest level possible. So for my mind, they should be the best at everything, including controlling their instinct to butt in somebody. I'm a parent that has two kids that are close in age. They play well together, but they play games where they put their hands on each other and they push and pull around and things. And almost every time it escalates to the point where somebody does something that's just a little too hard or a little too aggressive to the other person. That person doesn't like it, so they do something hard back. And then it escalates from there. It gets higher degree of force. And we all know how that works. That's exactly what the game of hockey is on purpose by design. Which is all fine. You should be able to throw checks and have fun that way and battle. And things are going to escalate a little bit. And that's what I love about the sport. Those battles that get a little out of hand. But why are we letting them happen when the sport isn't even being played? Why are we letting them happen between whistles? If I'm in a battle and I drive to the net as a forward, it's what I'm going to do. I crash the net. I fall in the crease. I get jumped on. It happens. I get it. And laying there at the bottom of the pile is actually kind of enjoyable. As long as people don't go too far with it, I'm fine. What I don't appreciate is the face washes, the punches to the back of the head, the greasy cross checks to the back, or anything from behind. And most of all, spearing, butt ending, and slew footing. The things that have nothing to do with the battle for space. The things that have nothing to do with competing against me. They're gutless. And that's why players do it. And they only get fines at the most, and nothing at best. Not even penalties in a lot of cases are called. So why wouldn't they keep doing it? That's why you stick your gloves in someone's face, because it's annoying. It's irritating. But it's well after the whistle and it serves no purpose other than to irritate the person enough to take a penalty. Face washing is a penalty to me. It's unsportsmanlike conduct. It's taunting. It's roughing. Even if you say, oh, well, it's just a little bit of gamesmanship, Josh. They're just having a little bit of fun out there. But this is where the danger occurs, because if you're just trying to show a little bit of gamesmanship or emotion, how does the player you're coming up to know that? How do you know when it's someone that's about to come up to you like Jordan Binnington did, who when he was leaving the game got in a bunch of people's faces, up to three or four different people and just kind of talked and didn't really do anything, and then we laugh and we just say it's just the emotion of the game. How do you know that's not a person that's going to come do something even more dangerous? When we look at what Gostisbehere just did to a Pittsburgh Penguin player after they scored an empty net goal, a little cross-check to the back into the boards, was that just emotion after having a rough season? And we all know it was a rough season in Philadelphia. We saw Carter Hart smash his stick into a billion pieces against the goalpost one day. So where do we draw a line from what is just emotion and what should be a misconduct penalty? To me, even if you accept that type of thing as just the emotion of the game, it should be acknowledged in some way by either a misconduct penalty or probably even a fine. It's a player throwing a childlike tantrum. And we've all thrown them, don't get me wrong. I understand. Even adults get to the point sometimes where, you know, you throw a tantrum, you get very frustrated. But afterwards, you realize how ridiculous it is, and you would expect to suffer the consequences of anything that happened while you were in that frame of mind. But this sport doesn't punish you. And that's what we have to remember. These guys are very good at controlling their emotions, but they're put into a cesspool of violence where players are encouraged to taunt you. They're encouraged to do it, to get you going by keeping that emotion high intentionally so that there will be fighting. It's a form of psychological torture in a way for these players. And in a lot of ways, I'm just like most of you saying, oh, come on, it's just a little shove. Get over it. You have to be stronger than that. And I get it. It's just a bit of gamesmanship. But then when players get frustrated and they flip a switch and jump at people and overreact to these situations, it's hard to blame them. Because you have to understand the environment the NHL creates. They're allowed to get away with stuff. And if someone comes at me and they just give me a little bump in the side or a little shoulder bump, that's one thing. But players also routinely come up and give you a cross check in the face. And it's okay. Sometimes it's not even a penalty. And at best, it's a fine, nothing more. So why wouldn't players do it? And how do you know when a player comes at you after the whistle, which type of player they're going to be? The one that shows a little bit of gamesmanship or the one that takes your teeth out? Is it going to be Brad Marchand from last night who gave just a little cross check to the side of the pants after the whistle? Or is it going to be Leo Komarov from last night that gave a butt end to the ribs? Or is it going to be Anthony Mantha from last week who came in with a high cross check? Who's it going to be? Tom Wilson that grabs your helmet off and slams you to the ice? So I understand why players err on the side of caution, assume this is a player that's going to punch them in the jaw, cross-check them in the jaw, or do something over the line, and preemptively cross-check or do something over the line back to prevent it. But if they do, who will I punish as the Department of Player Safety? Well, obviously I have to punish the guy who cross-checked in the face after all, just like I did on Buchnevich on Manta, because he's the one who technically did something. But in my NHL, I also feel we should start punishing the people who go in and start the stuff and instigate and stir the pot. We don't need that. It's not part of the game. It has nothing to do with the game. And that stuff should only happen during the game, not after the whistle. Now that brings up comparisons, and you can get caught up in the nuances of comparison. Like, I know people are going to ask me, well, how can you suspend Leo Komarov for 7 games and not suspend Brad Marchand for his cross-checking last night after the whistle? That was kind of similar. And the way things work, you are going to get the odd play where the optics don't look good. They look the same. But as I explained earlier about what type of thing I want out of the game, I have to remain true to how each play relates to the overall objective. And in the end, more often than not, it's going to work out. Plus, that works both ways. How can I justify suspending a player 1 to 2 games for an attempted legal body check in the context of a hockey play that happened to get a little excessive, and then give the same suspension to someone who did something that doesn't even pretend to be a hockey play after the whistle at a time when hockey isn't even happening? So I try not to compare things, but ultimately, if you look at all aspects of the game through the same lens, it's going to work out. For instance, my recent recommended suspension to Anthony Mantha for instigating an altercation against Pavel Buchnevich is consistent with the suspension I'd give to Pat Maroon for his incident with Montour recently, which is consistent with the suspension I'd have given to Joe Thornton for going after Ehlers a couple weeks ago. And I don't want to get into it again because I've been down this road too many times this week, but a perfect example of flaws in comparing incidents is the whole Wilson on Panarin and Crosby on Konechny head takedowns. I put a video on my YouTube explaining my thought process, and I love that people are getting it. Even some initial pushback was met with, oh, well, when you put it that way. So, you know, just a little bit of sitting back and looking at things through a different lens and going, what are we trying to keep out of the game and what do we want in? All you have to do is be clear with your purpose, consistent in the application. And in doing that, I find even people who don't agree, they at least can't be surprised when I make my announcements. It's just like head contact in the IIHF. As much as I don't fully agree with their zero tolerance policy and how they apply it, I don't get worked up about head contact penalties in international play because I know that's what they're doing. I know it's something they've made very clear it's important to them and they're consistent at it. So what are you going to do? You're going to play by their rules. That's all you can do. And by the way, I don't enjoy the idea of having to get out these punishments. I don't get excited when I see a dirty play because it gives me something to talk about. The point of my system isn't to punish, it's to prevent. In my NHL, my goal would be to not even look at my 6-game suspension categories or higher. Hopefully even the 3-to-5-game category would be a rare visit eventually. I want to move the standard of acceptability down to a manageable level so players won't even think about doing the things that are more severely punished at all. And I want to go hard on repeat offenders, no matter who they are. Hi, folks. Thanks for listening to Tough Call. If you're enjoying my takes on head contact and player safety, but you'd like to hear me talk about other aspects of hockey, I'd like to take just a minute and tell you about another project of mine, Bolton from Bolton. Bolton from Bolton is where I, Josh Bolton, and my brother Matt, you guessed it, Bolton, set each other up for lively hockey talk covering literally anything to do with it. It's not heavy analysis and stats, it's kitchen banter, like you do with your own family and friends. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to our Bolton from Bolton channel, that's B-O-U-L-T-O-N, or find us on all audio formats as well. We find ourselves funny, maybe you will too, and there's only one way to find out. See you there. And now, back to Tough Call. And now I'll do a by request, because I haven't done one in a while. I haven't had a real episode in a while. So I'll do a by request now. And this one comes from longtime Twitter follower Justin Strebel, at jstrebel22. So go ahead and give that account a follow. And he pointed me in the direction of a Braden McNabb hit on Mikko Rantanen from last night. And for those that haven't seen it, it's one of those plays where an attacking player is approaching the attacking blue line going up the boards, and a defender stops up and goes forward into contact to deliver a hit. The defender's going backwards, and then he stops suddenly and pushes forward into the attacking player. And I'll get more into my approach to these overall, but for now, looking at this one isolated incident, last night it seemed okay technique-wise to me when I watched it, but someone pointed out Rantanen never had possession of the puck. So when I got another look at it this morning, I said, you know what? They're right. He was never eligible to be checked. He never had possession. So it should have been interference right off the bat. But of course, the thing that bothers me about having a penalty for head contact and lumping all head contact under the same umbrella is that all we look for now is whether there was head contact or not. It's automatic now. Was there head contact? And that's sad because the danger with these stop up and explode into contact hits isn't the head contact. The timing has to be 100% perfect or it's going to be a bad play no matter what. And in this case, forgetting, of course, that the puck isn't involved, in this case, he timed it well, and while there was head contact, it was more based on the position of the players at the time of impact. Rantanen was bent down skating, and McNabb went outward into contact as opposed to upward. And he didn't really go outward enough to cause a problem. But it is very similar to a play that Justin also pointed out from 3 days ago on Robert Thomas. And it's in almost the identical spot on the rink, just at the blue line along the boards. Only this time McNabb was going faster than Thomas when he was cutting across. And he was going to miss his check entirely. So he had to stop. And at that point, he had to physically leap forward to cover more distance in the same amount of time as this more recent one because the timing of the player coming at him was different. So the one on Thomas a few days ago was a straight-up launch forward, an explosion into the hit. And you could say, well, so that means they're different. One looks good, one looks bad. But the problem is they're born of the same habit. It's not like these happen to be the only times McNabb has done this in his career either, and they just happen to have occurred days apart. One that comes to mind without even searching, I'm thinking back to the 2018 Stanley Cup Final, McNabb's hit on Kuznetsov, and oddly enough, it happened at the exact same spot on the ice, and it looked almost the exact same as the one on Thomas. So now with that perspective, the clean one on Rantanen is just a lesser version of the same play that went wrong in other instances. And it's the hit-at-all-costs mentality of this particular player that's the real issue. When the timing is good and the gap control is good like it was against Rantanen, then fine. But when the gap isn't as good and the timing is off, you can't just hit anyway because you're overcommitted. You can't do it properly, so you have to back off. And here's the difference in my mindset versus maybe some others, is they look at the other two as good hockey plays that went wrong, the ones on Kuznetsov and Thomas, were just good hockey plays that went wrong, and they give the benefit of the doubt that McNabb is a clean player because of this one on Rantanen and that looked good, and he just happened to have bad luck a few times. Whereas, based on this player's habits and patterns, I see this clean one the opposite. I see it as a bad hockey play that went right because he's proven time and again that even if the timing isn't there, even if the check isn't quite right, he's going to throw it anyway. We should demand more of players. We should expect from NHL-caliber defensemen that we need to give them credit that they're good enough to reach the level of control that I'm looking for. We need to expect better. We need to demand better because they are better than that. They just aren't being forced to be under the current rule guidelines. Now, if you wanted to be able to read an overview of my system somewhere, I do have a blog called Tough Call, and I haven't kept up with this year, and I apologize. It's just been a lot on my plate with making these YouTube videos and getting the podcast maintained. The blog was just a lot more work than the other two things, and something had to give, so I gave that up for a little bit. I am hoping to get back at it and change the format a little bit to make it a little easier on myself. But for now, you can go to thetoughcall.wordpress.com. There is still a blog there with old articles if you wanted to get a feel for where I'm coming from and see how consistent I've been over the years. Maybe I haven't been. I haven't looked at it in a while. And maybe you can call me out on that. Or maybe you'll see that I've been very consistent over the last few years. Who knows? But there is a scale on there on the menu called Tough Call Suspension Scale. And the slides that you see in my videos that show my categories, my fines, my 1 to 2 game suspensions, and so on. You can go read the criteria right there on the Tough Call Suspension Scale at thetoughcall.wordpress.com. And if you ever have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on my social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course you can comment right on the YouTube videos. You can comment in the comments section or in the comments on this podcast. Please subscribe to everything. Follow me everywhere, and let's get to know each other, and let's solve this problem. At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on specific teams or individual players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team, across every league, really, with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as I possibly can to increase the sample size and make a stronger case for how harsher penalties and properly targeted player education can work in reducing head contact in hockey, all instances of it. The Department of Player Safety supposedly has people watching every second of every game. Now, as much as I'd like to watch every game, as much as I try to, and as much as I'd like to have video of every questionable incident, the truth is, I'm only one man with an iPhone and the Game Center app. I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me videos or links to incidents, or even just a quick tweet or message saying, hey, did you see? Third period, Bolts-Kings game, checking to the head penalty. Something like that. It means a lot, and it makes a huge difference. Follow me on Twitter at ToughCallBlog, and like the Facebook page ToughCall, and as you watch, if you see a cheap play or something dirty or anything that makes you go, hey, you idiot, what are you watching? How did you miss that? Please send it my way, and a big thank you to those of you who already do. Keep them coming. How do you know, man?